basically take over council.
Just like lay on the table.
I am dying.
Yeah. Okay. Here.
Councilor Scott?
Present.
Councilor Flamin?
Here.
Councilor Kwan is here by teleconference.
Councilor Howie.
Here.
Councilor Warrior. Councilor Newman.
Here.
Councilor Nguyen. Councilor Mahal. Councilor Farouk.
Here.
Councilor Wong.
Here.
Councilor Kim.
Here.
And I'm here, the general manager is also here. Alright, wonderful. So with that, that takes care of speaker's business. We'll move directly into presentations. Presentation item 2A, the athletics and recreation fee, presented by Ian Reed and Cheryl Harwart. Hopefully I pronounced that well enough. You got some tips from Dr. Reed, so. Sponsored by Vice President Patches. Is there a seconder for this presentation? Councilor Howie. Is there any opposition to the athletics presentation? Seeing none, I'll turn it over to Dr. Reed.
Thanks, Sadiq. It is really a pleasure to be able to come and talk to Students Union Council once a year, and twice a year would even be better, but it seems like we can really only get once a year into the agenda. So we don't spend an awful lot of time in this presentation on detail. If you want more details, obviously we'll stay as long as time permits to take any questions that you might have. So we are here as a result, I would say, of the, when we went through the process to increase the fee, I guess it's about 3 years ago now, one of the things that we all agreed to is that we need to have better communication, at least some kind of a report from athletics and recreation, on the athletics and recreation fee from the Faculty of Physical Education and Recreation. So this is a part of that, this is a part of that process. So are you on the quick button?
Yeah.
So these are the five principles of the partnership that we have with the Students Union. Transparency, accountability, partnership, collaboration, consultation. So I'll go through these, each one of these for about a minute, explain to you how we live up to these five principles in our relationship. So the first one is transparency. And transparency is an interesting one because I'm not 100% sure, I've never really got a good answer from anybody on campus what transparency actually means. The operational definition of transparency is a bit unclear, but we've operationalized it to be showing the students essentially where their dollars go and what services they get for those dollars. So the students pay about $5.5 million in total in athletics and recreation fees. These are obviously round numbers. Generally speaking, the students just want to know what their fees pay for. And we generally use a simple example that the athletics and recreation fees pay a part of the cost, essentially, of the staff to provide the sport and recreation services to students. So that's kind of how we position the fee. Now, if you're looking at how fees, generally speaking, are administered on campus, in most cases, you know, the fees over the years have just been put into a general revenue, and they generally aren't attributed to any particular expense. We've tried to attribute those expenses so we can show a little bit better coherence between the revenues that come in and the way we spend the money. So the next one is accountability. The accountability process is essentially looked after by a new committee. It's about a year old, the Mandatory Non-Instructional Fees Oversight Committee. All of the fees that the students pay essentially are looked after, let's put it that way, by this committee. And I think there are six students on this committee, three undergraduate, so SU members, and three GSA members. And I believe that there are also about six administrators on the committee, so it's kind of evenly balanced that way. We look at things, right now, the business of that committee is to look at how the fees will be reported to the students, what the format will be, what kinds of information is in that. Now, in Sadiq's day, we had the cost fee, right? And the students were a huge part of making sure that the cost fee was actually, I'm going to call it, broken down into more constituent parts so that the revenue that the students pay into the cost fee is attributed to various areas on campus. And so this committee was formed after the cost fee, as a part of the deletion of the cost fee and amalgamating that fee into other services, the oversight committee came on to look after that. Is that a fair way to put it?
I'd say so, yeah.
Huh?
I prepared my mouth, so
is that pretty
I can provide details.
We could just go.
Sounds great.
Do this a little bit. And you got a carrot, right? So it's Bugs Bunny
Bugs
thing.
Bunny.
It's a Bugs Bunny joke, but I know it's your brother too.
What's up, Doc?
Bugs Bunny still around?
You look at me,
Still alive over there? I just wondered because you're a little older than these guys. Way younger than me, but anyway, way older than anyway, Bugs Bunny's still around. It was supposed to be a joke, didn't work, it's okay. So the responsibility for the allocation of the funds essentially goes to, in our case, it's the Dean of the Faculty of Physical Education and Recreation. It is the only fee that you pay that goes 100% to a faculty and is administered by a faculty. Okay, so next one's the way that the most important part of this message is to show that the students' union fee, while it's an extremely important part of, and I'm just going to speak on behalf of athletics because Cheryl Harvard is here to speak on behalf of Campus Community Recreation, but it is an extremely important part of the athletics funding. And if it wasn't for the athletics and recreation fee, there would be essentially no athletics program. Well, there wouldn't be an athletics program at the University of Alberta, just period. So the way we like to show it is that there's a $3.2 million revenue that comes in from the fee, and there's another $4.8 million that we raise over and above that in order to provide the programs in the 24 inter-university athletic teams that we operate. That is broken down by a $1.1 million contribution from central operating, which is basically money that comes from provincial government. We raise about $600,000 a year from donors, primarily the Adopt an Athlete program. $300,000 in sponsors, of which about $150,000 of that is Golden Bear Hockey. The whole gate for the year is about $400,000. That's down a little bit over the last couple of years because students now get in free to the games, but the liquor sales are definitely up. The alumni contribution is about $1.8 million. We have, I think, in the neighborhood of 15 alumni associations, alumni association for essentially each program. Every one of them runs a casino. They always usually run a golf tournament or a fundraising dinner of some kind. So every alumni association generates somewhere between $60,000 and $70,000 every year to put into the program. So that's a pretty good contribution from the alumni. The community programming is the Green and Gold Sports System. That's a couple of years ago. We're now closer to $1 million in the Green and Gold Sports System, but the Green and Gold Sports System also has a lot of costs associated with it, so that's definitely not just a profit. So the total expenditure of athletics is about $8 million, and I thought on the bottom, go ahead. Yeah, so the breakdown of the expenditures, so you can see the vast majority of our 50% is hardly a vast majority, so anyways, let's say around 50% is salaries. So they are contract academic sessional teaching, so all of our coaches are in that CAST category, which essentially makes them sessionals. They're all on 2 or 3 year rolling contracts. They are not tenured staff, and then we have all the non-academic staff. Travel is about $1.9 million a year. We live in a country where travel is the single biggest impediment to sport excellence. In any sport that anybody is in, the biggest barrier you have is to try to, as you move up and you become more elite in the system, it becomes much more expensive to go find people to play against that are as good as you are. So it is a very expensive country to do sport at a high level in. And supplies and rentals. The thing that I think is important to note is that the $1.5 million in student scholarships is not in the budget at all. It's not in the $8 million. There's somewhere in the neighborhood of 170 different funds that have been that are either endowed or annually donated for student scholarships for student athletes. So that's a lot of money that goes to support the students that play on our teams, because those students obviously have absolutely no time to work at all. They generally train and compete between 20 and 25 hours a week. They train at least 2 to 2.5 hours a day, and every weekend, busy almost every weekend for the entire 2 semesters. So it's a big, and so So the collaboration and consultation part, we do this biannual report to the Students Union GSA. We have the Athletics and Recreation Fees Policy Advisory Committee, so any issues that come up around the fees, the students can bring those to that committee. That committee would make recommendations then to the MNIP Oversight Committee, so if we have issues that come up and with the freeze on the fees, there are going to be issues that come up eventually if that freeze stays on for very long, because while the revenue is frozen, the expenses definitely are not, and that policy is going to create some major problems for the university if it stays in place for very much longer. But that's, you know, partly opinion, but kind of partly common sense too. So with that, I'll hand it over to Cheryl Harbert to present on the Campus Community Recreation. And
I always think it's easy to follow Ian because he makes you laugh and gets you all comfortable, and then I just come in and give you the stats and it's all good. It's
I always say it's easy to follow a clown except their birthday party.
Exactly. Thank goodness it's in the birthday party. We're all good. So from a Campus Community Recreation perspective, my area looks after all of the facility operations that happen here on North Campus as well as South Campus. So of course you all know that we have a great partnership that we developed related to the PAWS Center, where the students contributed about 50% of the cost of construction on that particular building, and it's been nothing more than a fantastic success. I think from all perspectives, I think we've got a lot of good success in terms of our collaboration. We have a lot of really great communication out of that with our student population, and flat out we've just got a lot of people coming through the door, so I think that's been a very positive aspect. So in terms of Campus Community Recreation, our facility staff wages primarily are in the area of that $2 million. When I look at this, it's really on the North Campus facilities that I focused on. Programming staff wages, $1.7 million. So this is people that are looking after organizing intramural programs or yoga programs or dance programs or any of the activities that you might participate in to keep you healthy and well. Operating costs for facilities over and above what the facilities and operations of the general university applies to us, $2.6 million. This really is just about, we need to clean the floors. We need to make sure that we have equipment to play basketball or repair hoops or clean them or refinish floors. So it's, you know, just one floor, for example, in one of the gymnasiums is $60,000 a year to refinish that. So you can see that 2.6 million doesn't go very far when you've got the amount of facilities that we have. And then when we, I just added this thought in this last year, we didn't talk about it last year actually, was CREP. So this is a specific fund that comes through the SU that's administered by a student group that we work with in order to enhance student experiences in our facilities and in our clubs. Again, it's really about making sure there's a distribution of activities that are available to our student population. The kinds of things that we get in, the kind of revenue we get in, so from Campus Community Recreation, we're seeing $2.1 million of the A&R fee. As you can see, and Ian's pointed this out in his area as well, it is not the sole amount of money that we receive. We raise $2.75 million in other sources. So those other sources might be memberships that the general community might buy to our facility, or they might be Christmas craft show comes in and they pay us an amount of money to rent the pavilion, things like that. So that's where that money is being raised from. U of A does also contribute in the area of utilities, some cleaning and some building envelopes. So big things like HVAC units and things like that, they would look after on our behalf. So that's where that funding comes in. And then you might know of a program called Live Well. We separate that specifically out. It's a physical activity and wellness program that's offered free across campus. You'd see it in partnerships with the new treadmills that are in Rutherford Library, for example, just trying to create more opportunities for students to experience physical activity. Services we provide, I mentioned this, but here on North Campus, the arena, the climbing center, gymnasiums, pavilion, all of these are things are covered by our particular facility area. And then in terms of other services, things that are more activity-based, club sports, so if you're a member of any of the particular clubs, we get involved in those, group exercise, intramurals, special events, there was just a winter walk that was out in, I think, 2 weeks ago, things like that, that all come into play. The idea here, what we're trying to do is create a community of students, a community in the university that people get attached to. So I think that's, it's really about creating a better experience for our student population. I thought I'd throw out some key stats for you. Last year I did this, and I think there were some shocked people that was sort of going, wow, that's a whole lot of people coming through the door. Just in the fitness center, so this is October 2015 to October 2016, 545,000 people coming through the door. And so if you're a fitness center person, you probably go, oh yeah, I absolutely know that. I can see it happens every day. This is a shocking amount of people, one that we would have never anticipated that many people coming through our facility when we originally built the POS Center. But again, it's fantastic. It's one of those situations. Build it, then they'll come. Through the locker rooms, so both the men's and women's locker rooms, 1.2 million people coming through those doors. Anybody been in the locker rooms recently? And you can say, yeah, right, I could absolutely see that. So just a side note on that I'm in discussions now with F&O to be able to actually repair and maintain, upgrade both the locker rooms. I think they're going to start on the women's side, but I'm not absolutely positive about that. But we're planning for both over the next couple of years. So hope to see that funding come through for that. Climbing Center, 23,000 users. So that's about 2,000. I think when we were in the Butter Dome in the corner, there was about 2,000 per year student users. So again, you can see this is a huge increase in the popularity of that particular sport. We're getting rave reviews from across the world about that particular facility. And as climbing is now going to become an Olympic sport in 2022, we're seeing even more interest in our particular climbing wall because it's got some unique features to it. LiveWell programming, just started up 2 years ago, and when we did the increase in the athletic and rec fee, and we've seen a 400% increase in participants there. So again, more students understanding what it is, what wellness is, and being able to incorporate that into their studies. Positive upgrades. And Dr. Reed had indicated that he is the volleyball commentator. So yeah, if you haven't done the live webcast viewing, go check out Dr. Reed's color commentary on that. But watch us on Canada West TV. So. We're happy to answer questions if you have any. And we're
thank you for being the most efficient presentation we've had all year.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Fantastic.
That's good to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Efficient.
Sure,
did,
sweet.
Not
yeah.
Did you say pathetic? No, you can go on.
Yeah.
Yeah, quick question. Is there any interest, what kind of data collection do you do at the, say, at the Tills when you're coming into the fitness center or any of those usages? Do you track anything more than just uses, or is there any kind of plan to really take advantage of that?
Well, if you could help us with that scenario, I would absolutely be on page. So what we do is we utilize the one card system for people to swipe through. To date, we have not been able to get the marriage between one card database and the RO's database in order to ascertain more information about our users. Some of it, I understand, they're trying to protect the privacy of students. I totally get that. But I think the more we can understand who our users are, when they're coming, who isn't coming, is equally as important. So to date, we actually have had no success in getting the marriage of those two systems to talk to each other. So we'd like to, but it's not something that's happening.
Hi. So thank you for your presentation, first of all. It's very efficient.
It's good.
I had a question about... I had a question about Campus Saint-Jean specifically. So I know that our Campus Saint-Jean students do pay this fee. So is there any support or like facilities or anything that you manage over on that?
Yeah, so we're doing two things there. One, we're working with the faculty over there to do student programming. So we do have a programmer who works directly with the faculty. And so I think I'm not positive about this, but I think we've seen a little bit more program opportunities on campus out there. And then the second thing that we do, we're actually doing all the maintenance on the fitness equipment out there as well. So that's hopefully that's improved over the last little while, because we actually are now working hard to send somebody out there on a regular basis to make sure that equipment isn't down or it's not down for long periods of time at least. But hopefully we've seen a little bit of improvement there.
Awesome, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Anybody, do you have a question?
Cool. Not so much a question, but maybe just a comment and maybe something you can bring back to your minions or your team. I was here for this presentation last year and I didn't really, like, I looked at the numbers like, oh yeah, this is cool and everything. But having the chance to actually go through and look at everything and see a lot of the presentation, or the offerings, I've noticed that a lot of it isn't so much done for students and the community, it's done with them. In particular, I had one of the digital media and promotions coordinator reach out to our partner association, trying to come up with a collaboration with the ongoing K-pop dance events that they do there. And a lot of the people in our department didn't even know that existed. So once we started exploring some of these partnerships and getting more interest in the, not just that program, but a lot of what else at CCR is involved, like what they do. It's that, and then getting the metrics with people in and out of the door, and then with athletics, a lot more people are taking advantage of the free games with their one card now. It's just fantastic to see just how many people are kind of looking beyond academics, which is important, but there's a lot more to university than the academic experience. So it's really cool to see what you guys are doing, and I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate that feedback, and on that note, one of the things we're just trying to plan right now is a promotional plan about how your athletic and rec fee benefits you. What do you get for that? I mean, we can talk to this group of people, and they'll probably go away understanding some parts of it, as you indicated, but we want to get a broader piece of information out there. You know, when somebody looks at how do they actually get access to a fitness center, so they know that part of it is that they're paying a fee for that particular service or any of the services that we offer. So I think this is a really important element of that communication and collaboration that Ian talked about earlier, that we want people to understand there is a relationship. We want to be, we are committed to it, and we want the students equally to be committed to that. So, yeah, it's a little money on that right now. Robin?
Yeah. Just a quick clarification question. I know a lot of individuals in this room weren't around when the PAW Center was being created and that partnership was being created. I mean, you talked about the significant contribution the students had in that project. I was wondering if you could quickly explain how that partnership evolved, what it looks like, and provide that context to this current council.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. First of all, it's the thing that I love to talk about the most is how that building actually came about. So for those of you who might not have been here a few years ago, we had two separate buildings on campus here, an east and a west building of that elite complex. And really what we did is we created two new facilities, a new climbing center, the space that's right on the corner of 87th and 114th. Right next to it, the new fitness center. So if you weren't here before that fitness center, you didn't miss a whole lot. Those of you who were would agree, yeah. You know, that space, old space, was probably about 1,000, maybe about 2,000 square feet of space. We now have 30,000 square feet of space for fitness. And then the other portion of the PAW Center that's really important, I think has become even more important as the building's grown, is the Social Street. And what we're finding with that is that it's becoming a really active space. It's an engaging space. People enjoy being there. It's a gathering space for people. There's been some starts of runs and starts of walks in that location. Finishes are the same thing. It's become a real gathering space. So I think it's been an integral part of the whole facility. The facility started, it was a $60 million renovation to the Van Vliet complex. And where that the funding came from that $30 million was committed by both GSA and the SU. So together, the fee that you pay for PAW Center, that $30 million pays that portion of the new building. The remaining portion of the building was paid for by either funds from the provincial government or by the university, and a donor to the climbing center of $10 million. So there was a lot of people and a lot of collaboration involved in putting that together. But it's significant to say that the students agreed to pay the $30 million of the $60 million. This is a very unusual model in Canada. I don't, Ian knows better most of the universities across Canada, but I'm not wrong, I think, in saying this is the only one that's done in this particular partnership.
I know the funding models.
No. Can't even hang it on him to say yes. But to my knowledge, it's the only one that's built in this manner where there's that significant contribution by the students. So I think from that perspective, that's one of the reasons why we're here, because we've built a great relationship over that particular facility and want to continue it along.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for the presentation. Definitely agree it's being very efficient. So
I'm not sure
I
that's a good thing.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go with good.
I saw that you said that there's been a 400% increase in participation in the LiveWell programming.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's been extra promotion or some sort of change in programming that's kind of facilitated this increase, and if there's any plans to like further expand to keep up with demand, or what the plan is for the future of LiveWell.
Yeah, good question. So the answer is simplistically is there has been an expansion of both programs, and most importantly, the collaboration we're doing with other services around campus as well.
Mm-hmm.
So over the first 2 years, we were doing things on our own and not really gathering much steam with that. But once we started to partner with University Health Services, University Wellness, other faculties and departments that are concerned about student health and wellness, now all of a sudden we started to generate some momentum on the programming that we were doing. So for example, I'm not sure if you've heard about it yet, but the ridiculously big paint night coming up is the, you know, we aren't going for a world record because we can't say that out loud, but but for sure, we want more than 500 people painting at the same night on a paint night. It's just a way to relax your mind, get out, have some fun with different people, and be part of something cool. So that's just one example of the kinds of things that we wouldn't have been able to do without a partnership with others.
Mm-hmm.
I think
Colin has a question back there.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much for the presentation. I was there, I think it was 4 years ago, when you guys gave the very first presentation to council. And yeah, I know I'm old. But I just want to say that I don't think there has been a group on campus that has been so forward in consulting with students in this manner, especially about a fee. Back then, when cost fee was, you know, a big scary thing that we didn't really know about, the athletics and rec fee was something that we could see concretely where it was going to go, and I think in that way, students were making a conscious investment in the facility and in the institution. So I wanted to thank you guys for coming again to council and keep building this relationship. And I hope that council keeps finding ways to interact with you guys as well. So thank you.
So thanks for the presentation. I haven't heard about this paint night, and I like paint nights, so I was wondering what it is.
You know what? I actually can't say the date because I don't know off the top of my head.
If somebody can't find it in the next 2 minutes, I'd be pretty disappointed in you guys. It's probably out there
Sorry.
In the virtual stratosphere or something.
March 10th from 5 to 8 p.m.
Thank you.
See that?
Good work, Tom.
We're talking
location on that?
Main gym.
Main gym, there you go. Did you get that one? Sorry, just making sure.
Yeah.
Bring
awesome.
Prizes.
I know because you emailed the Department of Art and Design.
Are there any more questions for our presentation?
Next year we have to bring prizes.
Well,
you just
yeah.
said we would definitely be the best presentation in the efficient and good.
Now I know why it is that Ian goes first and I go second, because then I stand up here and answer all the questions and he gets to Now I got it. It's taken me a while.
I couldn't answer any of those.
Awesome.
Like
well, we appreciate your time. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate
Thank you.
appreciate it, and thank you for organizing one. Appreciate it.
Yes, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Thomas.
Wonderful. Just before we get into that motion to special order, one thing, I see a lot of student spaces. If you want to ask questions during open forum, please make sure to register with me. Or send me an email at speaker@su.uofern.ca. So just wanted to throw that out there. Jumping back to Vice President Patch's motion to special order item 7B to the main agenda. Is there a seconder for this motion? Vice President Bannister. Because this is a, usually this would be classified as a suspension of the rules, but the manner in which we've been doing this is that there is debate on this. So usually a suspension of the rules is not debatable, not amendable, and requires a two-thirds majority. The way we've been running it in the past is that because it specifically has wording in standing orders, I believe it, I don't think it's in bylaw, but I do believe it's in standing orders, about what classifies a motion that can be special ordered. Usually I have a lot of debates. If council would not like that, then that's fine.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yes.
Can I omnibus my late additions motion into the same bucket of debate and voting to for the efficiencies?
Oh, no.
although I don't agree with Governor Champagne's wording, I don't agree with the premise. I'm just gonna say that. I know it's more efficient to do this, but I'm gonna accept debate on this motion, but not amending this motion. So with that, Vice President Patches, would you like to introduce your motion?
Certainly. Yeah.
One second.
All right, go ahead.
Sure thing. I'll make my introduction quick. As I sent out an email to council right after the submission deadline on this motion, so I would like to special order this to the main agenda because it's pertinent to the moving forward with the Margaret's Theater project, as well as we do have our general manager Mark Dumichel here to answer any questions on the proposal that he did provide to council, and it has been endorsed by finance committee, and I provided council with the proposal as well as an outline of the motion over the weekend, so there was adequate time to digest it. So I think it would be appropriate to bring it to the main agenda today. Thank you.
Is there any debate on the motion to suspend the rules? Yes, Councilor Flynn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ordinarily, I would be the first person to oppose suspending the rules to special order or late agenda items, but given that this was given on Friday, shortly after the deadline, and having sat in on the MHT renovation committee, I do understand that this is of importance, and the sooner we can get the ball rolling and funds released, the better we can get this program moving. So I am in favor of this.
Is there any further debates on item 7B, or on suspending the rules to have item 7B special order under the main agenda? Yes, Councilor Mondo.
I guess it's more of a question that somebody may be able to respond to than debate, but why the motion wasn't added to the main order paper when it was sent out so fast on Friday evening, regardless?
Missed the deadline. Simple. My error.
Is there any further debate on the motion? Seeing none, we'll go to a quick vote. Voting system is now live. Please vote. Voting will close in 3, 2, 1. So that motion carries with 23 in favor, 3 opposed, and 0 abstentions. So item 7B will be special ordered onto the main agenda. Assuming at this time Vice President Bannister would like to make a similar motion for item 8A. Is that accurate?
Accurate.
Is there a seconder for that motion? Councilor Sunday?
Yes.
That motion?
So this motion is to appoint two other individuals to the Discipline Interpretation Enforcement Board, or the DIE Board. The reason it's coming late is because we were only able to interview those candidates today, so it would have been impossible to add it earlier since we didn't have the candidates. The reason this is time sensitive is because DIE Board currently doesn't have enough members, and they need to have more members before the election process starts. As some councillors may recall, the only DIE Board hearing that happened last year was in the nomination process, which what will be, so if the same thing happens this year, then there will be needing to commune before our next council meeting, which is why it's time sensitive. Happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Bannister. We'll open up debate with Governor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As someone who sat on that committee, I agree. I forgot about the DIE Board possible potential meetings after nominations, and I think this is a time-sensitive motion and should proceed.
Thank you very much. Is there any further debate on the motion? Seeing none, we'll go to a vote. Voting system should now be live. Please vote. Voting will close in 3, 2, 1. So the motion carries with 24 in favor, 2 opposed, and 0 abstentions. So that will follow general orders item 8A. So that will be 8B under the main order papers. Wonderful. All right. So before we get into executive committee reports, just one thing. If you're voting against these motions, please make sure to state your reasoning why. There's no point in voting against the motion. You're not going to tell everybody why you're voting against it. It just is, to me, it's just a very hollow gesture. I think you should be explaining why you're opposed to such a motion. That extends to all items of debate, not just suspension of the rules. In this case, because it was debated. With that, we will go to executive committee reports. I'm just adjusting the timer here. All right, do any members of the executive wish to make a report? We'll go first with Vice President Patches.
Certainly. So most of what I've been up to for the past little bit can be found in my report, and I want to update on one thing. We're happy to report that even though there's declining, even though this year we've seen questionable numbers in enrollment and there's been tough times with some of the other fees that have been coming through, we're happy to report that the PAW Center fee will still be remaining underneath the approved $29 limit, which was approved by student referendum, and it'll be only increasing from $26.58 to $27, and this was upon recommendation from from faculty phys ed and rec, and that remains within what students voted on and under what students voted on back when the PAW Center fee was approved. So we're happy to report that. We just had that meeting since reports were due. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Patches. We'll go next to Vice President Sundari.
Perfect. So, as everybody knows, last week was MFest, and so when I ran for my executive position, one of my strongest things is that I want to build a bridge between the gap. I want to build bridges between the gap that exists between students and their parents. And I'm really glad to say that MFest was a massive, massive success. So as a part of my public mandate, that's one of the reasons why I did it. Now, with MFest, we actually had 731 attendees counted for at the event. That averages out to about 30 students on average for every single event. We had 24 events during the week, counting the Facebook live stream events. So that's the Alan Nursall keynote speaker, as well as the Career Confessions event. We can up that number to 1,234 students or individuals completely engaged. So with the 1,234, that averages out to about 50 people per event, which is really exciting. Now, with the rest of MFest, work is not done. We're still doing a report. So during the events, on great recommendation of one of our counselors from the last meeting, I sent out little evaluation slip surveys to each of the people that were at the event in order to keep track of the numbers of the people that were there. For the events that were missed, we're doing retroactive ones, so we've messaged the organizers of those events, and we're sending out that survey to the individuals that participated in their events as well. We're doing an exit survey for the hosts, as well as for the professionals that came out to the networking nights. So I'm really glad to say that MFest did in fact bring direct jobs directly to students. Now, cost. That's something that I'm actually very, very excited about. Now, as the festival organizer, I want to make sure that everything I did was done in an efficient way and saving as much student money as possible. So I would like to thank the Office of Alumni Relations for the $5,000 grant that they gave us, as well as members of the MFest Advisor Committee. So from the festival, we had a $5,000 grant.
Sorry, Vice President Sundari, your time is now up.
Keep asking me questions. I can tell you more about
Thank
the budget.
Thank you very much, Vice President Sundari. Your time is up. We'll go next to Vice President Bannister.
Hi, everyone. So, quick updates. It's only been a week since the last one. Today, Vice President Gosain and President Ramon and I had a very interesting meeting with folks from the Go Abroad office. So that was great. We really appreciated them chatting with us about how Go Abroad can do a better job communicating and offering programming for students. The other thing I'll mention, and this is on my Facebook page right now, my UASU VP academic page, but the council nomination packages actually are live now. So as a counselor, if you're planning on rerunning, please feel free to fill out that form. And if you're not planning on rerunning, please feel free to fill your seat with a new person by sending them that form. One of the most interesting things I think about the upcoming election is for the first time ever, who knows what I'm gonna say? Yeah. For the first time ever, council is gonna have council forums so that if you're running for council, you're gonna get a chance to stand up there and say why you're running and have your constituents ask quite a few questions. I'm really excited about that, and I hope you are too. So that's all I'm gonna say is please share that that application widely. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Vice President Bannister, do any other members of the executive wish to make reports? Seeing none, we'll go on to, I don't know why it's not in there, board and committee reports. It's just not on the main order of papers. We'll start with CAC.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So from today's CAC meeting, we went over remunerations for executives. Sorry, my bad. 21.50 was the recommended that will go to finance, excluding the benefits. Thank you, Christian. It's going to go through that entire system there as well. So that'll be first and second principles. There'll be lots of room for debate, and it will ultimately come to council as well. So if anybody has hard thoughts or wants to see any other recommendations they'd like to give, make sure to talk to the chair of finance. Another piece of information aside from that is I'll be emailing the chairs of all the committees to arrange our final chairs meeting in this semester, hopefully in late March. And then we do need to start getting working on turnover documents. I think DG has emailed those out to everybody, but I can double check. And then CAC will need an interim chair over the next 3 weeks. So if anybody on the committee is interested in that, please do let me know. If not, I'll try and find somebody and bug somebody in general. But aside that, I don't think I have anything else. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much, Councillor Larson. We'll go next to Councillor Christensen with an update on bylaw committee.
bylaw committee was supposed to meet this week, however, there was no items submitted for the agenda, so we are not meeting. In terms of business, the committee has finished everything that was planned on time and ahead of schedule, and so I'm very happy with that. There might be a few other things coming forward, but we only have one meeting left, which is more of a kind of wrap-up meeting and transition, but we might be able to get some business finished at that time. The only other thing was, I just wanted to let council know that, so at some point in the past, I don't remember the date, there was a bill that came before Students' Council discussing SEEP. After talking with President Seep, which is the Student Involvement Endowment Fund, there were supposed to be some changes to that, and we referred to bylaw committee. So when I take that as like something that bylaw committee had to do, unfortunately, it won't be able to be addressed this year. And so I'll just leave that in my transition document for something to be looked into in future, as it's not ready at this time.
Thank you very much, Councilor Christensen. We'll go next to Vice President Bannister for an update on nominating committee.
We have not met, so I don't have an update, but as I've mentioned before, the Senate applications will be coming out live after council applications, so if you're interested in that, stay tuned.
Thank you very much, Vice President Bannister. We'll go next to Vice President Patches for an update on finance committee.
Finance committee has not met since the last council meeting, but when we did meet just before that council meeting, we discussed the item of the special order to the recommend, and finance committee recommended to council to move forward with the funding at hand.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councilor Victoria DeYoung for an update on the audit.
I'm
oh, sorry, policy committee.
Yeah.
I was thinking about audit committee when I said.
Wrong person.
Sorry. Go ahead, sorry.
Okay, thank you. So we have a meeting today. We'll be moving, just because of the way student council is changed its schedule, we're gonna be changing our schedule to stay on off council Tuesdays. We're off council Tuesdays for after reading week, except for one committee meeting on Friday, March 10th. Just to accommodate committee members who are going to be taking leaves of absence. So the meeting today we talked about the public transit political policy. We're going to be adding a few things to that policy, including student safety on transit, and students who are employed by the university who there's a loophole that exists where they don't get access to the e-pass from the university like most staff does. But they also don't get access to the pass as a student during the summer, so we're going to try and fix that or advocate for that. We'll be bringing a tuition policy to the next council meeting, so we'll be renewing it as is. And we'll be bringing a lot of political policies to the next few council meetings as we review policies that are going to be expiring at the end of April, so just be ready for that. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Again, apologies. I was thinking about what committees we had left. And so we'll go next to Councilor Brophy for an update on audit committee.
All right, thank you very much. So audit committee met yesterday and might have set a new record for this year for most like quickly run meeting. We were out in like 15 minutes. It was awesome. In that very short time, we managed to get three audits approved. Those were the ISSS, NUA, and the RSJ. So yeah, we're trucking through. Hopefully we're still just waiting on some information from some of the other FAs that still need to get back to us, but hopefully we should be done doing all of those audits in the next little while. Okay.
Point of personal privilege.
Oh.
Yes.
Can I just remind council to try to not use acronyms whenever possible because people in open forum and our guests probably don't understand what those mean.
Okay. Sorry, yes, the University Undergraduate Association, Residence Saint-Jean, and the Science Students Association with a really long name that, Interdisciplinary Science Students Society? Okay, cool.
The Science
right.
Faculty Association.
Yeah. And if anybody has friends on FAs that they aren't sure whether or not that FA has sent us the audits, has sent us stuff we need for their audit, maybe light a bit of a fire under them because we'd like to get those done. Thank you. Bye.
Guess we'll be hearing from Councilor Brophy. We'll go next to Governor Champagne for an update on the Board of Governors.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There has been no new governor business since last meeting. However, we did have PASA. Sorry. That's the committee you were talking about at the presentation earlier. POSOC stands for
Physical Safety and Wellness Strategic Operating Committee.
Whoa!
It's a great committee. And we met kind of like what VP Patches was talking about. And the thing I'll just add to that is they were talking about the space with the fireplace. Near the walkthrough in Van Vliet Center. They want to kind of make that a good space for events. So they're thinking in the spring of possibly adding benches outside and kind of having just an outside area that can blend in with the inside area. which would make it a much more versatile space during the summer months, which would be great. Beyond that, there's not much else to add. There's not a whole lot of progress on the community kitchen they were planning on, so that's still in the works, but it is very much delayed. They're quite swamped with projects. That's all I'll have to add. Next meeting is the 27th, my next meeting, and that's the University Relations Committee, the Board of University Relations Committee. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Governor Champagne. Are there any other members of any boards or committees who wish to make a report? Yes, Councillor Sunday. Sorry, I look at the screen a lot.
Okay, first of all, sorry if this is, I'm saying this in the wrong place, but the Council on Aboriginal Initiatives met on February 9th. A new question will be added to the research ethics review application, which asks whether proposed research involves Aboriginal people. The role of the Cultural Support Office in providing support for Indigenous and non-Indigenous staff on Indigenous issues was also discussed. Among other services, they provide cultural sensitivity workshops to groups and faculties. While it's primarily for university staff and faculty, it is also a resource for students. Other things discussed include the Equity, Diversity, Inclusion Week, the Native Studies Massive Open Online Course, and the Aboriginal Student Steering Committee's work on an admission statement for FNMI individuals applying to the university.
Thank you very much, Councillor Sunday, for a very appropriate report. Perfect place to do that. Are there any other members of any boards or committees who wish to make a report? Seeing none, we'll close board and committee reports there and go into open forum. Are there any questions for open forum? Yes.
I had a question for VP Sundari. I was wondering, since you said that MFest was an overall success, if you believe there were any shortcomings or areas in which it could be improved in, or it could have been improved upon.
Thank you very much. So with areas that need to be improved upon as a first-time festival, one of the reasons why we're doing the report is so that we can gather feedback. That way, the next time it's done, it's done even bigger and better. So things that I would really like to see improved upon next year is even more engagement with the satellite campuses. So Campus Saint-Jean as well as Augustana, those are campuses that I was reaching out to. I was reaching out to the career centers over there, trying to get some programming. Unfortunately, we didn't get much this year. So the live stream was a really big part in that accessibility aspect to it. Next year, when this is done again, I want to see more programming coming out of the French campus as well as Augustana. Yeah, and then a few things done well before. Yeah. Yeah, if anybody wants to know about budgets, it's
Thank you very much, Vice President Sundari. Are there any other questions for open forum? Yeah, go ahead.
As a follow-up to that question, rather than just focusing on the shortcomings, were there anything done that you believe were done exceptionally well for in MFest?
Thank you very much. So I'll also use this as a way to talk about the budget that we talked about before. So in addition to the $5,000 grant that we got from Alumni Relations, as well as the $728 that we raised from Networking Night, and again, I'm waiting for the full actuals, so council will have full actuals and the exact correct numbers in a few weeks. But it looks like we've spent less than $1,100 on the entire festival. So it is a smashing success. Woo! It's a smashing success. There was an incredibly efficient use of resources. I spent a lot of time over the past few months making sure that I could making sure that there's certain efficiencies that are met. That way there's no kind of superfluous spending on MFest. That's something that's taken up a lot of my time over the past few weeks and the past few months. So yeah, one of the biggest successes is that we spent less than $1,100 on a festival that reached out to 731 students. You know, it's a massive festival. We've done a great thing and I'm excited to see it happen again. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any additional questions for open forum? Seeing none. close open forum there. And we'll move into question period. So we'll start with the written questions that were submitted. The first question was from Councillor Dion to Vice President Sundari. Did you want to follow that question up, Councillor Dion?
Not this time.
All right. The second question was also from Councillor Dion to Vice President Sundari. Did you want to ask a follow-up question?
Yeah, I do.
Thank you. So I kind of want to ask the same question I asked last council meeting, because the Vice President did outline reasons why him sitting on policy committee is important. So I wanted to reconfirm with him whether he will entirely commit to the policy committee from now on. This specifically includes having assigned work on the committee and council agendas on time and not arriving late to meetings. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Dion. So to answer your question, yes, of course. Like it says in the answer there, ensuring that I commit to full policy is something that I think is very important for the Students' Union and for myself as well. So that is something that we will see continue. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Sundari. We'll go to Governor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for Vice President Sundari.
Sure.
So my question is, if we received a $5,000 grant, which is great, and we only spent $1,100, will the rest of the grant be returned, or will it be reallocated to other projects, or do we have the ability to apply to other projects?
Okay. Thank you very much, Governor Champagne. I should have reworded that. The Students' Union paid $1,100. So in addition to the $5,000 grant that we got and the $728 raised, the extra cost that the Students' Union would have covered totals $1,100. So we as a Students' Union paid $1,100 for the event on top of the grants and the money raised. Oh, yes. And I would also like to point out that that is also just a very small fraction of what was budgeted. So it's much, much less than the PA that I think I really got. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Sundari. We'll go next to Councillor Mondo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for Vice President Sundari.
Sure.
Could you share with us your goals for policy committee for the rest of the year and what you hope to achieve as a member of policy committee?
Thank you very much, Councillor Mondo. So my goals for policy committee for the year and what I hope to achieve is, of course, supporting the Students' Union as we go through a few. I do believe there's four more policies that have to be done. So making sure that I'm supporting the policy committee and the advocacy work that's being done, taking what I learned, of course, as VP External, and the work that CAUSE is doing as well as CAS is doing to support the rest of the things that we're doing. So yeah, making sure that I'm there and vocal and present and providing the governmental, the government perspective, I suppose. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councillor Prasad.
All right. My question is to VP Sundari, External. Sorry. So I'm glad to see the info so well. I just was wondering if you looked at like the stats by faculty, like who went. So like, were there more art students? Were there more science students?
Thank you very much, Councillor Prasad. Unfortunately not. The stats are students as a whole. That's another thing that I hope to do next year. Thank you.
To see with the continuation of the event, what happens here.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councillor Christensen.
This question is for VP Sundari. So just listening to what has been kind of going on, it sounds a bit like the Vice President might have been struggling to complete certain aspects and balance certain aspects of his mandate, and particularly that assigned on Policy Committee. And I'm just wondering if VP has been neglecting any other aspects of his role as a result of that in the past.
Vice President Sundari, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Councillor Christensen. So I would like to point out that I am not struggling with Policy Committee. In fact, the MNIT policy that came out, I made the changes to that.
And of course that was approved by the committee and whatnot, so you know, the committee is doing very, very well. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Governor Sean Fanning.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry, I don't mean to ask more questions to VP Sandoval, but in my experience when I was president of Campus Student Association, we looked a lot at how the projects could be repeated throughout the years, and I'm glad that something like MFest is looked at to be repeated. I think it's a very good idea. My question then is, if do we expect to receive that grant funding every year? And if not, what is the feasibility of this project without the grant funding? Thank you.
Vice President Sundari, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you very much, Governor Champagne. So we do not know if we'll get the grant funding year by year, but the best thing is that now that we have a solidified budget and we know exactly how much it's going to cost, it's going to be that much easier. One of the hardest things with MFest was, of course, securing funding for it. Now that we have proven to the business community that this is a viable project, that this is something that can be invested in, I think it's going to be much easier to get funding from corporates as well as the university moving forward in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councillor Larson.
I have a question. Oh, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for the Chair of Policy, Councillor Dion. I would just like to know what the process, and I would like you to iterate what the process was for the MF policy and how many meetings this took and the contributions that everybody would have put in within the committee.
Councillor Dion, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. So this, the MNIF policy kind of went on the committee's radar in the fall semester. So it was first assigned to the vice president, external. I don't remember the exact time exactly. I'd have to go back and look, but it was sometime during the fall semester. We saw edits to the, we talked about it at a few meetings in January and then we finally saw the fully edited first principles at not this committee meeting, but 2 weeks ago. It was at that meeting that so the vice president provided his edits, and then the committee edited in addition. So I'd just like to clarify that it was an effort of the whole, not of one individual. So just to make that clear.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Vice President Sundari.
So I do have a question for the Chair of the Policy Committee. So we are in the last trimester of our council, and last semester we only approved one policy at council. With four more policies set to expire in April and 4 weeks of council left, I was just wondering why it's taken so long to move on policy.
Councillor
Young,
go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. No, I admit that that was a shortcoming on my part. We spent a lot of the summer semester working on the sexual violence policy that we passed in the committee. It was a little bit slow going, and I take responsibility for not kind of spearheading or kind of leading the committee in that respect. I do feel confident that we will get through everything before the end of the term. So I hope that answers your question. Feel free to ask some more.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councillor Brockham.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Chair of Policy Committee. From what I'm hearing so far, there wasn't actually a deadline set for the MDF policy. So my question then is, why is this such a huge issue if it has been completed and voted on and edited before the end of term? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Councillor Young.
Thank you for the question. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In the committee, I don't recall ever assigning firm deadlines early on. I said in the committee early on in my term as chair that I wasn't going to assign deadlines because I trusted the executive's capacity or like ability to schedule themselves. But I did say that later on in the, but this was I believe in one of the committee meetings during the summer that if we didn't start seeing progress, I would start assigning deadlines. So the past few to provide things for the committee and by the next meeting. So that's kind of how I've been doing it, is can you have this done by the next committee meeting? And that has, there have been a few times where the vice president did not produce those things by the next meeting, or had them after the agenda was sent out, and or with some a little less information than we would have wanted. So it has been kind of an ongoing issue that, not an ongoing issue, sorry, I don't mean to say that there's a big issue here. I don't want to kind of blow this out of proportion. But I do think that, I do think that my questions have been reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor DeYoung. We'll go next to Councillor Mondo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for Vice President Sundari. Could you tell us why citations still have not been produced for the MNIC policy? Thank you.
Vice President Sundari, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Councillor Mondo. Unfortunately not. Like I said, it's been very busy the past few weeks with MFest, and making sure that the festival is something that was well within the SU's budget and very inexpensive to students is something that I took pride in, and that's something that I've spent the past few past while doing. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to you, Councillor Sunday.
My question is to the chair of the policy committee. Has policy committee done anything to remove the gendered language found in its standing orders? Specifically, the standing orders found on the Students' Union website, as outlined in the CAC Standing Committee Review Report.
Councillor DeYoung, go ahead.
Thank you for the question. I took a look through it, and I didn't see any gendered language when I, a couple weeks ago, I looked through it. So yeah, I double checked that. I didn't see anything. Is there still language in there that I missed?
Yes.
They do?
Yes.
That was a shortcoming on my part, and that will be fixed at the next committee meeting. Thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Vice President Sundar.
Perfect. So my question again is to the chair of the policy committee. So with some possibly contentious policies coming up, does the policy chair have a contingency plan just in case policies that expire soon are not passed in the next 4 weeks of council?
Councillor DeYoung.
Thank you for the question. We haven't discussed this in the committee yet, but I think we'll be able to see pretty early on, probably by the next meeting or the meeting after, whether we'll have some difficulties renewing the policies. If necessary, we will call extra meetings. The committee is free on Council Tuesdays, so if necessary, we will meet. And yeah, that's about it.
Thank you very much.
Point of parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, Governor Champagne.
If a councillor or a member of council would like to make a clarification on an inaccuracy that was said, is that a point of order?
No.
What type of parliamentary tool is used in those situations?
That would probably go in the form of a request for information and just kind of reiterating, just asking whether, like, obviously not argumentatively or in the form of a debate, but just asking for more information or clarification on a specific point. Unfortunately, in question period, there's no real way to just be like, no, that's wrong, unless you get somebody else to ask you a question about a piece of inaccurate information, because a point of order has to do with the rules governing how the meetings are run. What a parliamentary inquiry is just a question as to how something comes about, like what we just did. So I think that most appropriate would be a request for information. But
Governor Champagne, I have a question that I would like to ask.
Point of personal privilege.
Yes.
Can you please remind members to speak into the microphone so the rest of us can hear?
Yes. Sorry.
Thank you. Because I should be speaking into the microphone.
Yeah, so for the purposes of the live stream, please speak into the microphone. Also, if you have questions or if you're responding to questions, please avoid using you statements or second person statements. Please try to speak in third person, although it's very awkward. That's how parliamentary procedure is. And if you look at any tapes from legislature or parliament, basically almost in a parliamentary style.
Almost.
Almost in parliamentary style. Because we don't stand up, but that's something that we should do, I think. Anyways, we'll go to President Rahman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for our government. I was wondering if you'd like to clarify any potential inaccuracies you may have heard within the past hour.
Yes, Governor Champagne, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Mr. President, for the question. Yes, indeed, I just think I heard that we have 4 weeks of council left. I think that's inaccurate. I think we have four meetings of council left. That's just, I think, very important because it literally cuts our meetings in half if we only have 4 weeks of council left. So just to keep in mind, we do have, I believe, four meetings of council left and not 4 weeks worth of council left. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Governor Champagne. And with that, our first 15 minutes of question period has elapsed. I currently do not have anyone on the speaker's list. I currently now have one person on the speaker's list. So unless I see five placards, we'll move on. I see five, so we'll continue with our next 15 minutes. Go to Councilor Mondo.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question for Vice President Gosain. Would you like to give us would you like to give us an update on the upcoming LHSA election?
Vice President Gosain, go ahead.
Yes, my pleasure. So last Thursday was the first general meeting of the LHSA after 2 years-ish of suspension. So that was very exciting. So the purpose of that meeting was to get the constitution passed, because the list of representatives, the Office of Discover Governance, and myself have been working on it. And so it needs to be approved in order for them to submit that constitution to student group services and then be approved as a student group. So now, if you all go to the SU website, and I included the link, the specific link in my report, but it will give you all the deadlines for kind of the, or the timeline for the LHSA elections. So the way that it works is the applications for CRO and DRO have closed, I believe, for the LHSA exec elections. The way that it works for them is first they elect the president, and then they elect VPs and other members of the association. And so that will be going on. I'm very happy that this process was, that we were able to start this process in February. That took some convincing, because typically the timeline was supposed to be around, well, later in the year. And so that collaboration with the Dean of Students has been going smoothly and has been successful so far. Thanks so much for the question.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions for question period? Seeing none, we'll close question period there. And we'll move on to board and committee business. Starting with item 7A, Dion moves upon recommendation of policy committee to approve the first principles of the MNIF policy as revised. MNIF, for those of you who are paying attention to the live stream, is mandatory non-instructional fees. As Vice President Bannister pointed out, trying to not use acronyms as much so that things are very clear to everyone. Is there a seconder for this motion? Councilor Flamin? Councilor DeYoung, would you like to introduce your motion? Go ahead.
I would. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So yeah, we're revising the MNIF policy. The biggest change between the current and the revised version is that we're trying to differentiate between University of Alberta mandatory non-instructional fees and Students Union mandatory non-instructional fees, because you know, this policy is kind of, as it stands, it's kind of advocating to the university but not making that distinction, because the SU does have MNIFs that it gives to students. All the newer points are kind of making clarifications about that. I'm trying to find examples. It mostly talks about how MNIFs are unregulated by the government, so the University of Alberta and the Students' Union both can change MNIFs, increase, decrease, kind of as they like it. The Students' Union does have its own mechanism to do that. But yeah, that's I don't think the changes are too crazy, but questions. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any debate on item 7A? Yes, Councillor Manda.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I am in support of all of the changes we have made to the policy in policy committee. However, I do have some concerns over the current lack of citations in the policy. As you can see in item 7 of the revised policy, it literally says citation. So in my opinion, this should be corrected.
Thank you very much, Councillor Manda. Is there any further debate on item 7A?
I would like to move to amend
Yes.
number 7 to remove the usage of citation.
So there's President Rahman is proposing to amend. Just put this up here. No, that doesn't look great at all. So proposing to amend point 7 under revised facts to strike citation. Is there a seconder for this motion, this amendment? Vice President Sundari. Does Councillor DeYoung see this amendment as friendly? Wonderful. So that is a friendly amendment. We'll continue on. Is there any further points of debate for item 7A? So just as a quick point of clarification, because I don't think we've had too many of these or any at all, the amendment that was proposed was not objected to by the mover of the motion. Which made it a friendly amendment so that it didn't require any debate or a vote. So we'll move on. We'll go to Councillor Larson. Oh, sorry. Councillor Christensen. Go ahead.
Thank you. I just wondered, not being that familiar with policies, what the citation is and why this word citation is there and why it needs to be removed. I just don't understand.
Thank you very much, Councillor Christensen. Is there any further debate on item 7A? Yes, Councillor Manda.
I would like to move to refer the policy to policy committee.
Is there a seconder for this motion? Seeing none, we will go back to debate on item 7A. Is there any further debate on item 7A? Yes, Councillor DeYoung, go ahead.
So for the citations, the impression I got at the last committee meeting was that these would just be good to have on the website. I could be, correct me if I'm wrong, Councillor Manda, but yeah, that was what I saw. So I don't think that those, you know, citations aren't really a standard, but I think they can be valuable, and I think I'd like to have them on the website, but I don't think we need to have them approved here, and I don't think, and this information isn't inaccurate, that we, as far as I know, that we brought to the, that we talked about in the committee.
Thank you very much. Is there any further debate on item 7A? Yes, President Rahman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll just build off a bit on what Councillor Keong just said, which I think is all fair and accurate. What's contained in the facts right now is accurate, and it doesn't preclude us from including facts in the follow-up clauses, which are escaping right now. I think it's the resolution, sort of the resolve clauses. For the citation, I think the most appropriate citation would be the document that was approved by the Board of Governors saying, this is how University of Alberta and this are approved, and then maybe having a citation to be aligned in the Students' Union bylaw that talks about how Students' Union membership fees are increased by a different method. That's one way of doing it, but I still think that would be highly relevant to include in the second readings of this as opposed to in the first readings. So I think my recommendation for council is this policy will get the job done as is, and without the citation, it'll be just as fine as it was with the citation.
very much. Is there any further debate on item 7A? Seeing none, we'll go to a vote. So once again, we're voting on item 7A. Dion Flanagan move upon recommendation of policy committee to approve the first principles of the mandatory non-instructional fee or MNIF policy as revised. Voting system is now live. Please vote. The voting system will close in 3, 2, 1. That motion carries with 24 in favor, 2 opposed, and no abstentions. Wonderful. We'll move on to item 7B. Patches moves on recommendation of Finance Committee to approve $134,000 to be pulled from the building and tenant reserve. Is there a seconder for this motion? Mr. Flamin? Vice President Patches, would you like to introduce your motion?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll provide an additional explanation in addition to the recommendation that our general manager provided to us in the report that was emailed to council. So essentially, this request is to take $134,000 out of the building and tenant reserve. Now, a little bit of context is that building and tenant reserve exists solely for the purpose of projects that actually are made to improve the building. For example, the last atrium project, this is the fund in which this is the place in which the funding came out to fund the atrium, as well as past renovations, for example, the food court, as well as when the substage area was created back in the day, that used to actually be an open courtyard. So the purpose of this fund is exactly for what we're both moving today to fund this for, and specifically the breakdown can be found in detail in the report, but essentially this is funding for the next step in the design process, which is design development, which is taking the idea that we have created and refining it into a more solidified plan, as well as we heard feedback from council last meeting, as well as from hearing this from multiple stakeholders, including some of the board members, the Friends of the Meyer Horowitz, that it was recommended that we conduct a market analysis of the current theater market within Edmonton, and we very much so agree with that. So we've earmarked some funds over this request to do that, and we would bring on an expert in the arts community in Edmonton to provide an analysis as to where the theater would sit in the arts community, i.e., how many seats there is, what the current landscape is, and then also provide information on what arts groups in Edmonton require from their theaters. So some arts groups require theaters with 2,000 seats, and some require theaters with 100. So we want to make sure we are aware of what the climate is, and that the Meyer Horowitz Theater project can be tailored to that.
Thank you very much, Vice President Patches. Is there any debate on item 7B? Start with Councillor Brockman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I should probably explain that I was the sole vote no on Finance Committee against this. The reason I voted no, and the reason I'm still going to vote no, is because of the way the money has been spent so far. So my issues that I brought up in Finance were that correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was like $300,000 or $400,000 has been spent already. We are now doing the assessment and our market assessment now, after it was neglected the first go-around. And I did my own little math calculations here, because I'm an engineer, so of course I like math, no one knows. But I did a quick little calculation, and given that we were told initially that students would not be paying any money towards this, and then it turned into a third of costs to be funded by students, that works out to about $150 per student, and you already pay $450 over your university career in fees. So that works out to about $3,750 per year on the Mac side. So my whole issue was that I do not want to see money being spent by students on a project that was sold to us and pitched to us initially as not being spent on students, and that no, we weren't going to, and then within 2 months it went up to a third. So that is why I voted no. I thought I should explain that to all of you, and thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much, Councillor Prochna. We'll go next to Councillor Monda. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just have a question that I'm hoping either the General Manager or Vice President Patches will be able to address. So, based on my memory of the last few presentations, it was my understanding that we were going to complete the fundraising assessment before moving on to the next phase. I'm not sure if I'm right about that, but I'm just wondering if that plan has changed and we're doing this this funding approval for the further design work earlier than anticipated, and also what the current status of the fundraising assessment is. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Councilor Miranda. We'll go next to the general manager, Mr. Demichelis.
I'm just going to make a few comments to clarify some things. First, Vice President Patches is working most closely with the fundraising group. They are roughly on track in terms, I know they are roughly on track. My responsibility is the design planning, so I'm going to speak to that. First, it's simply not, I apologize because I think it's a mistake in what we've communicated. $300,000 or $400,000 has not been spent so far on planning. What has been spent was about $40,000 for the needs assessment originally. That was funded by a grant. And about another $90,000 to $100,000 right now we're sitting at for the schematic design piece. So we're nowhere near the $300,000 or $400,000 piece. As for the funding model, I don't want to speak to whether students should or shouldn't pay. I think that's ultimately council's purview. What I will say, though, is at the scale and at the time frames that we're talking about for any kind of mortgages, we're not looking at $37 per student. I don't think that's a reasonable amount to have students pay for this project. I think it's probably half, less than half of that, of what if it does end up going to students. I don't know that it will. That again is up to you guys, not up to me. And just to reiterate, the funding model currently is looking at approximately a third of the cost for each group for the full project. We do have a backup plan in terms of looking at reducing the scale of the project if necessary. We will only really, I think, be proceeding with the larger scale project if we achieve sufficient community and government support. As the operators of that theater, we are going to have to do something about that theater. And that is not as saleable to government or to donors as the project design as we've currently outlined. We will be able to raise some money for it, but not as much as for the full project. Fortunately, I believe that the difference would be between the project we presented and the scaled back project is approximately what we would raise from the raise from outside funders. So I don't feel that the amount that students contribute to this is going to change one way or the other. I think it's going to be very consistent. But I don't predict the future. I'm just giving you my current assessment of where the costs are at. So just to recap a couple things, we haven't spent anywhere near $300,000 or $400,000. We're currently at about $140,000 in total, $40,000 of which has been funded. I don't expect a student spending 4 years to end up contributing $150,000 to the theater. I think that's crazy. And I would expect it to be considerably less. I don't really want to give numbers here because apparently it'll come back to haunt me. I know that. But if anybody does want to talk to me separately, I have done some initial spreadsheets on costings for mortgages, and that I'm happy to talk about among people.
Thank you very much, Mr. Demichelis. Any other points of debate for item 7B? Seeing none. Vice President Patches, go ahead.
Certainly. So I'll address a couple questions that were brought forward. First off, just in response to what Mr. Dumashaw said in regards to, I do have a little more intel on the fundraising side of things. So the feasibility study is well underway, and I'm happy to report that we finalized the case documents in which they'll be taking to prospective funders, and we've also finalized the interview list. And Viterra, the company that is completing this, is now commencing interviews and sitting down with prospective people. So we should have a report within
I wanna say a month and a half, but I'll keep council updated on that timeline, specifically in my reports on my every report I give a my reports renovation update, and I'll include that in there for everyone's information, so keep an eye on that. Secondly, I just wanna provide a bit of context, and specifically to the point that Councillor Crockner brought up in the timing of the market analysis. And while I agree that, well, he mentioned that he questioned the timing of the market analysis, and I'd like to answer that a little bit in regards to the timing. A market, specifically, it's difficult to make a market analysis on an item that we don't know what it'll look like. So specifically, the reason we're targeting to doing a market analysis now is because now we have an idea of what the theater would possibly look like with the schematic design. Essentially, how schematic design and design development work is schematic design is it's very scientific, actually. It's kind of crazy how these architects do it, but it's schematic design is the identification of a problem and a hypothesis. Once we move into design development, we are really solidifying down that into a final decision. So design development, a lot of the stuff can change between those two steps. So essentially, we now have a hypothesis of what this project could look like in schematic design, and now we want to take that, and now we have an idea, we have something that we can do market analysis on, and we have something that we can do consultation on. So essentially, what the process of the Myra Horse Theater has been so far is creating decision-making tools for future counselors. Because we realize this is a big project, and one that students ultimately have to decide on, which touches a bit on the point about students funding it. That is a decision that students council in the future will have to make, and I've taken it upon myself as VP Operations and Finance this year to develop as many decision-making tools that future counselors can use, be that a market analysis, a feasibility study, schematic design, so that people can make an educated decision that will best benefit students and best serve the University of Florida community. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Patches. Are there any other points of debate on item 7B, Councillor Mata?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a follow-up question. So, just to clarify with this schematic design, the general manager mentioned that depending on the funding we receive from potential partners, there may be a scaled back version of the project versus the full version of the project, and I'm just wondering if both of those or only one of those is going to be included in the schematic design. And as a follow-up to that, if we haven't completed the fundraising assessment yet, if we're only completing one in the schematic design process, would it make more sense to wait until that is finished? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Councillor Mondo. Are there any other points of debate for item 7B? We'll go to the general manager. Go ahead.
So as a students union, we've done a lot of projects over the last 20 years, and they've all been very successful. One of the advantages we've had for all of those was a really clear idea, definite idea of how much money we could put together going into them. This is one case in which we don't. So what we've done, and I really have to give Vice President Patch a tremendous amount of credit here. He has really taken the bull by the horns trying to figure out how we can assess this. And that's why we have Vitrio on board. We need to go out and talk to the market. So we talk about market assessment. Yes, there's the theater market, but there's also the fundraising market we have to be concerned about. So we've gone out, and we're doing our best to try to find the best estimate we can as to how much we can raise. The issue is, you have to kind of, when you have these conversations, you have to kind of have something to talk about. So if you go in there and say, "Yeah, I got this," the guy at the bar who's talking about like this great idea that he has, nobody really pays attention to him if they're seriously, because he hasn't really thought it out. The process of planning is to plot it out and then have something substantive that we can talk about with potential donors and government to assess their readiness to fund. Secondly, when we apply for grants, and we do think there are some pretty big grants we can get from government on this, they require a certain level of planning to have been done already. Now, we don't know what our ultimate funding envelope is going to look like. What we do know is that to bring the theater up to where we think it needs to be in terms of the capacity, particularly of the front of house, we need to do an expansion. It's an expansion
absolute, is it, the expansion is actually a big chunk of the cost, and is it absolutely required? I think it is, but worst case scenario, I mean, I have to think prepared all contingencies, and we could do an upgrade to the look and feel of the front of house and the technical part of the theater as well, and we have a pretty good idea of what that will cost. Can we use the existing planning if we have to scale it back? Partially. We would have to modify those initial plans, but a good chunk of the plans, because a good chunk of the plans have to do with the back of house and the systems work, continues on. So we're pretty comfortable that the prudent thing for us to do at this point is to move forward to the next stage in the planning process. This is a part that I am pretty familiar with because I've been on numerous projects both for the SU and for the university. This is kind of how it goes. The unfortunate thing, the challenge that we're struggling with, and I think that it's reflected in the questions we're getting from council, is that because we haven't got solid funding on the whole project yet, we're kind of progressing in kind of a tentative way. What I will say is I am pretty sure in terms of that base worst case scenario renovation of the theater, I'm pretty sure that we can build a case to get the amount of money we need to do that. I would be happy at a future council meeting to outline my thoughts on that, but it will ultimately come back to you guys to decide. But we can't keep moving unless we keep planning and keep moving the ball forward. To delay basically ends up delaying everything as we go through and costs, it will cost us more. I hope that counts. If I had a vote, support.
Thank you very much. Are there any other points of debate for item 7B? Seeing none, we'll go to the vote. Voting system is now live. Please vote. Voting system will close in 3, 2, 1. So that motion carries with 20 in favor, 4 opposed, and 0 abstentions. With that, technically 90 minutes of our agenda has elapsed. I would be inclined to continue as we only have 2 items left. So if council is all right with it, we can just keep meeting moving, not break for a recess. Great, let's keep going. All right, so that closes board and committee business. We'll move on to general orders. Item 8A, Sunday, seconded by Al-Hussein, move to ratify Jenny Dew as a tribune and Alan Floria. As chief tribune of the Discipline, Interpretation, and Enforcement Board, effective immediately. For those of you who are on the live stream and who don't know what the Discipline, Interpretation, and Enforcement Board is, it's also known as the DIE Board. You can find more information on the SU website. Councillor Sunday, would you like to introduce your motion? Go ahead.
On Friday, February 3rd, the Discipline, Interpretation, and Enforcement Board Tribune Appointment Committee met and interviewed potential candidates for the position of Tribune and Chief Tribune. Of the individuals interviewed for the position of Tribune, the committee thought that Jenny would be a good addition to the Discipline, Interpretation, and Enforcement Board. Moreover, upon interviewing Alan, it was the committee's decision that Alan was the right candidate for the position of Chief Tribune.
Thank you very much, Councilor Sunday. I would recommend that if anyone wanted to go into their individual qualifications versus qualifications of other candidates, I'm not sure how many candidates there were, but I'd recommend that if you wanted to do that, you could move this meeting into in-camera session. Just wanted to put that out there before we start debating item 8A. That being said, are there any points of debate for item 8A? Yes, Councillor Mondo.
Would Councillor Sunday like to share how many applicants applied?
Sunday, go ahead. Counselor Sunday, go ahead.
For this round of like interviewing, for the position of Tribune, only 2 people applied, and for the position of Chief Tribune, only 1.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Vice President Bannister.
Just to jump in on that answer, we then opened it up and received 4 more applications, which is why this is in 2 separate motions.
Thank you very much. Are there any other points of debate for item 8A? Seeing none, go to a vote. Voting system is now live. Please vote. Voting will close in 3, 2, 1. So that motion carries unanimously with 23 in favor, 0 opposed, and 0 abstentions. We'll move right along to item 8B. Bannister moves to appoint Tor Potter and Colin Lasaraba to serve on the Dye Board, also known as the Discipline Interpretation and Enforcement Board. Is there a seconder for this motion? Counselor Sunday? Vice President Bannister, do you want to introduce your motion?
I don't think it's necessary.
Thank you very much. We'll go directly into debate. Is there any debate on item 8B? Seeing none, we'll go to a vote. Voting system is now live. Please vote. Voting will close in 3, 2, 1. So once again, that motion carries unanimously with 24 in favor, 0 opposed, and 0 abstentions. So unless someone wants to make a motion to suspend the rules to have 7C special order onto main agenda, we will proceed. Wrap up the meeting. So we'll take attendance really quickly. Starting with President Rahman.
Here.
Vice President Bannister.
Here.
Vice President Sundari.
Here.
Vice President Patches.
Here.
Vice President Gossain.
Here.
Governor Champagne.
Here.
Councilor McKinley.
Here.
Councilor Angus. Proxy for Councilor Deshawa. Councilor Mondo.
Here.
Councilor Larson.
Here.
Councilor Victoria Dion. Councilor Lilo. Proxy for Councilor Yin. Councilor Designate Moran for Councilor Hammond. Councilor Designate Islam for Councilor Alhamouri. Councilor Prasad.
Here.
Councilor Prodnow.
Yep.
Councilor Nahi. Councilor Nick. Councilor Designate for Councilor Nick Dion. Councilor Hashim?
Here.
Councilor Brophy?
Here.
Councilor Christensen?
Here.
Councilor Sunday?
Here.
Councilor Scott?
Present.
Councilor Fleming?
Here.
Councilor Kwan? He's here. I'm just waiting to see if he said present. Councilor Howie?
Here.
Councilor Warrior? Councilor Newman? Councilor Nguyen? Councilor Mahal? Councilor Farouk?
Here.
Councilor Wong? Councilor Kim.
Here.
And I'm here. General Manager is here. Meeting adjourned at 8:02 p.m. Good luck with all your elections, people. And
yeah, I am excited. That's the time.
Yeah.